Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and apricot, I do, eh?
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Erin Durden Little, and she's the Farms Education Program Director for Redwood Roots Farm. And she interned at Redwood Roots after serving in the Peace Corps as a volunteer in Bolivia from 2001 to 2003. And she completed a master's degree at UC Davis in the area of agricultural and community development in 2006 and returned to Redwood Roots. Tell us a little bit about what a community-supported agriculture is.
Community-supported agriculture, or CSA, is a relationship between a farm and farmer and a group of shareholders or customers of the farm. So the idea is that shareholders pay for a subscription for a year's worth of produce from a farm. And this is a great relationship because farmers have a guaranteed market for their produce and often get payment earlier in the year up front if possible. So all the overhead costs of starting up in spring are easier to deal with when you have people paying up front. And then the shareholders get a share of the harvest for the growing season. So at Redwood Roots Farm, we have a guaranteed 20-week season during which the shareholders come to the farm to pick up their produce. There are usually a couple bonus weeks, and then they even get to come out over the winter and you pick produce from the farm as well.
Wow, that's great. So when people are able to, you know, put some of that money forward ahead of time, that's kind of like in the old days, farmers had to go to the bank and take out a loan to be able to buy their seed, be able to buy all of their soil amendments and things like that. And so this is a way of kind of front loading the farm so that it can operate.
Right. A lot of the stress of starting up during the early part of the year is taken care of. Not always, but if shareholders can pay that up front, it helps a lot. There are lots of other benefits too, not only being able to cover your spring costs, but CSAs often generate a nice sense of community. So we have shareholders that come out and visit the farm. There's a direct connection to where their produce is coming from. It's a huge social event every time there's a distribution. People are there talking about how they use their food. They're walking around the garden. The kids come out there. There are picnics. Other benefits include that a farmer is usually growing a large diversity of crops on a CSA farm. They're providing a range of things, storage crops, fresh greens, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, flowers, herbs. And so it's not a monocrop on the land. You're providing a whole range of produce throughout the year. So there's an ethic of stewardship often associated with CSAs. And then it's really common to have a community education component, which is what we're really building at Redwood Roots Farm as well.
Well, tell me about the community education component.
We have a variety of education programs. One is the farm internship that Janet leads. Janet Zarnicki, the farmer at Redwood Roots Farm. She has a spring and summer internship every year so that people can come out and get experience working on a farm and get an idea of what that takes. That's where I started at the farm, interning during a summer internship several years back. So that continues.
What sort of a time commitment is that to be an intern?
It's 7 to 8 hours a week for 3 months. So you usually have a 3.5 or 4 hour shift 2 times a week.
And do you do a variety of things, lots of different things within a week?
One of the components of growing a diverse array of crops and having a diverse farm is that there are a diverse number of things that you can be doing. There are lots of activities that interns participate in, whether it's making soil mixes or planting, weeding. And then spring always has a lot of projects, getting things ready for the farming season. Then the other educational components of the farm, I've been organizing a workshop series for the last couple years now. So we just got started this spring with our series and we'll be going through September.
And you have different people coming in to help with different classes. What sorts of workshops have you offered and who have been your presenters?
We definitely cover workshops that help people in their own home garden. So a series on starting your organic garden at home, covering soil and compost and seed starting. This year, we're covering pests for the first time. We have a variety of cooking classes. We're trying to expand those offerings. Myself, some shareholders, some other folks teach those classes. We have some local bird experts come in and do a birding workshop. Pete Haggard helps with insects. Rita Jacinto will be coming in to do plant propagation this year. She's from Flying Blue Dog. So we pull from the farm and from the shareholders in the local community to bring these topics.
I know that the farm is an organic farm, and that's a lot more about feeding soil and making sure that you have healthy soil and making sure you have healthy plants than actually fighting some of the pests later. What are some of the things that you do in an organic farm that you don't do in a conventional farm?
Well, we don't use synthetic chemicals and try to limit the number of inputs as much as possible. I do want to specify that we are not a certified organic farm. We do everything organically and with the most sustainable practices possible, but we don't have certification. One of the benefits of being a CSA is that our shareholders see exactly what we're doing and there's absolute transparency. We deal with pests and disease on a very holistic standpoint, focusing on, like you said, feeding the soil, making sure that our soil's healthy so that our plants are healthy. If you keep your whole system thriving, then you have less of an issue. We do use some physical control to keep insects off plants. We use something called floating row cover to actually physically cover rows of crops that are more affected by insects than others.
So that's just a barrier, really. Let sunlight in, water can pass through it, and keep those insects out.
Right. We do have a soil pest out there called Symphylan that Janet just deals with by accepting that there's going to be some crop damage due to this pest and rotates things around as much as possible.
So tell me about the farm to school program, because I think it's so great when kids can see some of these things that they eat and where they come from and can try new things. So tell us about that program.
The other main component of our education out at the farm is youth programs. We have a couple things going on right now. I have been hosting farm to school field trips for the Community Alliance with Family Farmers, CAF, for a number of years now. And they've been coming to the farm before I got there as well. We bring usually 40 kids out at a time, and they come to the farm for about an hour and a half. We set up activity stations for them and usually include a tasting from the farm as part of that so that they see things growing in the field. They do an activity with soil and plants. They get to taste something fresh from the farm. They sing some songs with us. They usually take something back to the classroom with them and have a wonderful time. So it's a first-time exposure, essentially, for some of the kids around here that haven't been on a working farm before. In conjunction with that, I've developed an internship for people who want to get experience in garden-based education, which is a philosophy that you can teach anything that kids are supposed to be learning in school through the garden. So our activities are tied to what kids are supposed to be learning in school and to those academic standards. And I'm training folks in that philosophy and the different activities we do at the farm so that they can help with the field trips. So that's in its second year and growing in popularity as well. So that's really exciting. I'm also developing a children's garden out at the farm, which I'm thrilled about. There's a little space to turn into a space for kids to come and actually do more gardening instead of just visiting the farm, which I will be utilizing to create long-term programming so that kids can come out repeatedly instead of just for a one-time visit. They can come back and have a project that's ongoing and do some cooking out there and actually grow some food.
If people have children and they want to grow some things in the garden that they would think would be really fun for the kids to grow, what would be the crops that you think kids find the most interesting?
Kids like things that are big or really tiny, really colorful, that have fun names. You can do things thematically, so you can create gardens based on a theme like a salsa garden or a pizza garden. The extremes are always popular, and things with fun names. I recommend large sunflowers or tiny tomatoes and anything that's snackable.
This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking to Aaron Durden-Little.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and every kind of do.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU and KHSR for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.